Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another exciting episode of Season 3 of Through the Crypto. Today, we are talking Gemini to apply for a broker-dealer license. We have former Ripple exec leaving for Binance. We have TD Ameritrade backing ErisX to get the green light for settle futures in Bitcoin. What? And then finally, on our main topic, we're discussing, do you want a revolution? Seriously, Bitcoin, do you want a revolution? Through a podcast, starting now.
It's time for the news.
Thriller with Carr Gonzalez. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls from around the world. How you doing? Welcome back to another exciting season of Thriller Crypto. That's right. Today is July 2nd, 2019. I'm Carr Gonzalez, your navigator, your personal chauffeur amongst this world of cryptocurrency. Get on board, ladies and gentlemen. Get on board. Let me open the door for you. Here you go. Step in. Watch yourself right there. We got some hors d'oeuvres around. You know what I'm saying. No, seriously. Welcome back to season three. And I hope to make this season extra special. Seriously. I think for the longest time, you know, we've tried to like run across and cover everything all at once. I think this season we're going to pace ourselves because we need to go the full decade, right? Okay. With that, let's go ahead and jump into the news. So it looks like Gemini is applying for a broker dealer license in a bid to trade for crypto securities. That's right. Gemini previously partnered with the tokenized securities platform Harbor, which allows institutional investors to buy securities with Gemini's GUSD stablecoin and to also receive dollar denominated dividends via GUSD. It stands to reason that Gemini would also want to facilitate the trading of such securities on its own platform. Now, Kevin Young, a Harbor's marketing lead, told CoinDesk that the Gemini team is very easy to work with, and we are aligned in terms of taking a proactive regulatory approach and addressing the needs of the institutional players in the market. Also, a source with knowledge of Gemini's operations told CoinDesk that the plan is to permit securities from external platforms such as Harbor to eventually trade on Gemini. However, winning the necessary approvals may take some time. And finally, FINRA has so far appeared reticent to approve broker-dealer applications by companies interacting with cryptocurrencies, even as security tokens. The self-regulatory organization is reportedly sitting on roughly 40 applications for these approvals, with companies waiting as long as 14 months. Only time will tell if Gemini will also become a trading platform for tokenized securities. It's interesting. This is the STO that everybody keeps talking about that's going to start the next bull run. We'll see. But it's going to be interesting to see how this kind of plays out. We know Abra currently right now allows you to trade not only cryptocurrencies, but some, you know, highly beloved stocks. And they also have different worldwide currencies. But I think Gemini is going to take a different approach and a more regulatory approved approach. We have TD Ameritrade backed ErisX gets the green light to settle futures in Bitcoin. That's right. ErisX, which is backed by U.S. brokerage TD Ameritrade, announced that the CFTC has granted it a derivatives clearing organization license, or known as a DCO, acting as a secondary approval on top of an existing design contract market, a DCM license, that the exchange already held. Now, the approvals mean that the company can now launch crypto futures products under the auspices of the U.S. regulator. While no firm timeline was provided, ErisX's announcement said it would launch its futures contracts, which would be physically settled, meaning, of course, customers receive real Bitcoin and not the cash equivalent, later this year. In a statement, ErisX CEO Thomas Chippas said, "This reflects a structure that institutional investors expect from other asset classes and will help drive these markets toward greater relevance and accessibility." He also said, under the DCO order, ErisX will be authorized to provide clearing services for fully collateralized virtual currency futures. ErisX indirect parent company, ErisX Exchange LLC, is registered with the CFTC as a designated contract market. And finally, Bakkt. That's right. Bakkt, the subsidiary of NYSE parent firm ICE, is also planning to launch its own physically settled Bitcoin futures and is currently waiting on a trust company license from the New York Department of Financial Services. So this is pretty good news for ErisX, and it's going to be interesting to see how this all shakes out throughout the rest of the year. Either way, it's bullish, baby. Our last piece of news is kind of a sideways curveball. That's right. Former Ripple executive is to lead Binance's U.S. expansion as a new exchange CEO. That's right. CZ founder and CEO of Binance said in an announcement that he is confident that Catherine Coley, who used to be, that's right, the head of XRP institutional liquidity at San Francisco-based distributed ledger tech startup Ripple, CZ said, I am confident that with Coley's leadership and Binance's leading technology platforms, Binance US will be able to provide valuable services to the US community. Coley said, this is just the beginning of a long journey ahead, and I look forward to working with Binance as a partner to unlock more potential for the blockchain ecosystem here in the US. Now, this comes weeks after Binance announced that it will open a site for US-based traders via BAM. That's right, its partner here in the United States. Following the deal, Binance.com, the exchange's global trading platform, moved to block access for users based in all territories of the U.S. Yeah, you can thank FinCEN for that. And then, right away, what happened? Well, all the XRP army out there went ahead and said, well, now they're gonna implement XRP, and they're going to use that as the underlying trading. They're going to use XRapid. Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. This looks more for bad news for Ripple than it does good news, in my opinion. This just shows what I've always assumed to be what was kind of happening behind the scenes at Ripple. Just going to South by and seeing David Schwartz and hearing the way what they were talking about there, I really realized that Ripple's pivoting, man, and they're looking for a way to survive. And I think a lot of people within that company are recognizing that, and they're jumping ship. It happens. It's technology. It's fintech. It moves at a very fast pace, especially these days. Okay, with that, let's get into... Oh, no, wait. You know what? We have one more piece of news. I totally forgot about this. So have you ever felt down because you're holding on to your XRP from $3 to, 20 cents or whatever it is now, 40 cents. Well, now there's a song for you. Check this out. Yeah, I'm gonna ride my alts down to all-time lows. I'm gonna buy till I can't no more. I'm gonna buy these alts cause they're oversold. I'm gonna buy till I can't no more. I got my old coins by the bag, emotionally attached. Throw them on my back, got my ledger on my neck. Buying all these shit coins, you can keep your Bitcoin. I am broke as hell, but I will never sell. I'm never selling nothing. I'm not selling nothing. I'm never selling nothing. I'm not selling nothing. Up all night on finance, ask me for my financial advice, and if I'm nice, I'll tell you what to buy next. FOMO by the pump, panic sell the dump. I'll be holding bags cause I'm never missing my chance. I'm never selling nothing. Yeah, it's a pretty awesome video. It's by Little Nas X. It's called O-Town Road. It's a Bitcoin version. It's pretty funny, and the video is even more spectacular. All right, let's do it.
Thriller Podcast. Interesting crypto video of the day.
Okay, so there's a really good video right now on London Real. It's with Andreas Antonopoulos, and he's talking about the future of money, and it's spectacular. Like, it truly is. There's nothing that gets me up in the morning like some good Andreas gospel. Seriously. I've always said this. He's a Carl Sagan of crypto and of Bitcoin and everything out there, and he really understands this technology really well. And I want you to listen to this. He goes pretty in depth. And if you have like 2 hours, head over to YouTube and watch this long, small documentary, it seems like. So check this out.
Politicians around the world are trying to gradually reduce democracy until they can eradicate it completely. every transaction you ever made tells something about your politics, your associations. If the people in power choose to, they can decide to debank you. Now imagine what happens if your bank account is shut down and cash doesn't exist. You can just cut off millions of people from access to the world economy. Make them non-people. They're doing that today.
China is using technology to monitor all of its people.
The world's first digital dictatorship.
And then there's the alternative. True peer-to-peer digital currencies that do not belong or are not controlled by any state, any corporation. Your move, government. You can't remove crypto from your country. Now I've made it my mission to educate as many people as possible about the future impact of open blockchain technology that give you complete freedom and privacy to transact. Declare independence. You can take control of your own money, and no one holds your money for you.
When it comes to cryptocurrency and blockchain, it doesn't get any better than Andreas Antonopoulos. He's written 6 books and tours relentlessly around the world promoting the idea of cryptocurrency. He doesn't endorse ICOs, but he's out there to warn you about some of the pitfalls and some of the scams that are currently happening in crypto. And why? He believes that this is the future of money. And he also believes that we need to separate the banks and the government. And when those two are colluding, they can stop you from being part of this entire system. He also is not a fan of digital currency. He likes it the old-fashioned way where you can use it anonymously to do whatever you want. And the reason I keep having Andreas back on London Real is because I think the privacy of our money and the way that we can use it in a borderless way is tantamount to our freedom and the future of ours as a society. So we must pay attention to this, because otherwise we're gonna get to a place one day where someone is telling you what you can do with your money, which means what you can do with your mind and what you can do with your life. So please pay attention to this episode, because it really could affect your future. This is London Real. I am Brian Rose. My guest today is Andreas Antonopoulos, the best-selling author, speaker, educator, and one of the world's foremost cryptocurrency and blockchain experts. You're the author of 4 books, including Mastering Bitcoin and the Internet of Money, and you travel the world advocating greater privacy and freedom in our financial lives. To date, you've educated millions and are known for delivering stimulating talks that combine economics, psychology, technology, and game theory with current events, anecdotes, and history. Andreas, welcome back to London Real.
Oh, thank you so much for having me back. It was so much fun the last 2 times we did it, and I'm glad we got an opportunity to do it again.
Yeah, I'm so excited. It feels like you were here yesterday. I feel like I know you. And I always tell people there's only one guest we have on to talk about crypto, blockchain, and that's you, because you're the guy that just, not only do you have an amazing history, you know so much about it, but you also, you kind of, you know, you separate yourself from the economics of that business. So you are always this kind of, I don't know, true source of information. That's the way I look at you. Because, you know, you go out there, really, I feel it's part of your mission just to spread information, right? Mm-hmm. Did I read that right?
Yeah, I mean, I like to think of myself as focused on education, but almost like the Walmart greeter of open blockchain. So like I'm the old guy who's standing inside the door, and you come in and you go, "Welcome, folks. Can I interest you in some barbecue equipment in aisle 4 this month?" You know, it's like I'm, for many people, the first face they see or the first video they watch when they get interested in crypto. And so now I've made it my mission to give people useful, neutral information that they can easily understand, and guide them on a safe road into this crazy space with all of the drama and madness that's going on around it.
Yeah, and there is a lot of craziness. Mm-hmm. I might want to actually start with kind of my own history and education of Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And then I really want to talk about what's going on with you. First of all, what's it like to be in London compared to all the other places you travel? What's your relationship like with this city?
Well, I lived here for 10 years. I'm half British. I went to school here and all of that. So London is exactly as I left it. I arrived yesterday. It's been raining continuously. It will rain continuously until the day I leave. So it feels immediately familiar. Right. And yeah, I mean, I love London, and I come back often. And when I'm here and when I'm talking to people who are here, you'll probably notice my accent shifts and some more Britishism start coming out of my mouth. So that's one of the things that London does to me.
Yeah, it kind of pulls that out, right?
Yeah.
And otherwise, you literally are nonstop traveling the world. I mean, we were talking earlier, and you were making a joke about Airbnb. I mean, you've basically been going from Airbnb to Airbnb for 3.5 years, right?
Yeah, so I quit having an apartment 4 years ago. And now I don't have a permanent base. Everything I own fits in 2 suitcases and a little shoulder bag. And I travel with that continuously. That's all the belongings I have in the world. 46 kilos, or for our American audience, 98 pounds of stuff.
Yeah, it's amazing to think that he's just so dedicated to this space, and it's a true testament to his, not only in his endurance, but his just acceptability of people. And I would say, if you haven't had the opportunity to see him speak live, I would make sure you do that, especially if you're somebody who is an investor in Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies, or just somebody who's involved in the space. I think seeing Andreas alive was probably one of the things that really cemented for me why I was really doing this podcast and why I was going to these conferences and flying here and flying there. Like, it really told me, it spoke to me, and it helped me understand why, you know, this technology is important and why we need to get the word out there for everybody. And I think Andreas is one of the few people in this space that can really do that. It was one of the best speakings I've ever seen in my entire life. Seriously. I've seen a lot of interesting people. But yeah, get out there, buy some tickets to some Andreas Antonopoulos. Seriously. Okay. With that, let's get into coin talk. That's right. We got to talk some coinage, baby. Boy. Let's do it. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Coin Talk, my favorite part of the day, your favorite part of the day, I hope. And before we jump into that, I got to kind of do a couple announcements. First things first, baby boy, first things first. So what I want to announce is we have a July 4th Crypto Purge coming out tomorrow. Actually at midnight. So I guess it's tomorrow. So tomorrow. And then we're going back to our regular scheduled broadcast of Thriller Crypto. And that's going to be a Thriller News on a Sunday and then a Thriller Crypto this type of episode sometime in the week. It's probably going to be Monday or Wednesday. And then we also have our Thriller Crypto subscription shows. And those are running on Monday through Friday. So we have 3 shows that we do weekly: Thriller Insights, Thriller Rundown, and Thriller Coin Talk. And everybody who subscribes to that gets access to those shows. And every once in a while, we'll give away a freebie. But this is going to take over for our Patreon that we had last year. We're no longer dealing with Patreon, thank God. We're dealing with Substack, and they're a great partner, and they provide all the best cool features. And hopefully soon, crypto, right? That'd be cool. But yeah, if you guys are interested, check out our website, thrillerx.com, for all our latest and greatest episodes for the past 2 seasons, and then all our upcoming episodes will show up there as well too. And yeah, super excited. I think we recorded like during the off season, as I like to call it. I think we recorded like a total of 1, 2, 3, 4. Gosh, it seems like at least 15 or 20 episodes here from the last episode of season 2 to now season 3. And that's just an our Thriller Crypto subscription. So if you're interested in checking that out, go sign up. It's for free. And if you want to subscribe, you can do that as well too. Okay, with that, let's go ahead and get into Coin Talk. That's right. Now, what we've been talking on the Thriller Crypto side is, especially during this whole off season, we've been talking about just institutional implications, Bitcoin macro fundamentals, quantitative easing. That's right. Good old Carr has extended his vocabulary. No, he's like, I've had to like really get into the whole world, macroeconomic world. It's interesting, and it's also can be boring sometimes, but I find myself to be quite fascinated, especially with these Federal Reserve talks. Believe it or not, those are somewhat interesting, especially when they bring up like Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, and then you kind of see how these CNBC reporters are really out of touch with how that works. Anyways, with all that, let's go ahead and play our disclaimer at this point. I mean, if we don't play our disclaimer, then at this point, FINRA can come after us, FinCEN, whoever, CZ from Binance, we don't know. People will come after us, so let's roll the disclaimer.
Remember, Thriller Podcast does not give financial advice. He cannot tell the future, even if he thinks he can. He is just some dude trying to save the world one Satoshi at a time.
So if you weren't paying attention this off season while we were gone, Bitcoin had a rally, man. If I would have known that, I would have never ended season two. I was saying that throughout the whole off season. I was just telling everybody who was listening to the shows. And, you know, it's one of those things where you just never know. Like, you just don't know. That's what's great about crypto. Facebook ended up turning out to be really good news for the space. Became the whipping boy, as Eric Voorhees called it. It's interesting how Bitcoin just refuses to die. And even now, you have people out there saying, oh, we're going down. We're going to go down to 9,000. It's going to go sub $4,000 level. And what does Bitcoin do today? It shoots up. It shoots up to $11,000 and says, one more time, got me feeling so free. We're gonna celebrate and dance so free. One more time. It's not gonna die. You can't kill this thing. It was funny. I was watching on my favorite YouTubers today, and everybody was like, it's gonna go down. It's gonna go down. And this is one thing that I've noticed, just kind of being in this space for so long, I start to realize that it's not really guessing or predicting whether it's gonna go down or up. It's giving people options, right? It's letting you know, this is the first level that we're going to go down to. If it reaches that level, this is the next level that I'll go down to. Okay, and that's the bearish choice. And then let me give you the bullish choice. And then you tell them, okay, well, this is the level it's going to go up to. And if it gets there, then it's going to go up to this level. And giving people that option, letting them know that there's two different trajectories it's going to go, and being right about that is good. And then overall, you giving your two cents as to what you think, just your intuition, just being in the space for a really long time and understanding how this market works and telling people that. And that's all people really want. I see far too many people try to make these predictions, you know, and try to shoot themselves in the foot. I'm not saying I'm perfect, but I've done that in the past. And just understanding this space and seeing it for so long, I realized that it's really just giving people options and being right about that stuff. So right now, we've been talking about the whole week, if you've been subscribed, and we've been talking about how exactly Bitcoin is consolidating right now. If we go back here, we can see that, gosh, what was it? I want to say it was like at 1385, somewhere around there, 13875. It almost got to 14K. Or got pretty damn close to it. And that was back on June 26th, right? So at that point, we knew it was going to come down. It had reached that certain threshold, and it was going to go down, and it was going to retest those $11,500 levels. And then finally, it went down to $10,300. And then just here recently, like not even 24 hours ago, it went down to $9,666. I know. It was pretty scary. At that point, I was letting everybody know that, hey, if we reach 9,200, if we reach these $9,000 levels, then we're probably going to go sub 7,500 at this point. And so I jumped on the Telegram and displayed a chart and said, okay, here, the next 48 hours, if we jump above this descending triangle, then there's a chance that we're going to end up on the bullish side of this kind of uncertainty, right? And so right now we're testing that $11,500 level. We're trying to get past that resistance. Now, at a certain point, if we can get past that, then we're going to retest right above 12,000. And we can test that, then we're going to go right and test above 12,000. 13K. And if this all fails, then we're going to go back down. If this doesn't hold up, if we can't get past this 11,500, then we're going to drop back down and retest at 9,666. And then at that point, if it breaks through that, then we're going sub, right? So you got to leave yourself an out. You got to set your stop losses. And there's just a lot of factors at play. But we go really in depth in this during the middle of the week on our subscription channel. So it's pretty cool. I like it. I enjoy it. It's very fun to look at Bitcoin. And I've been doing a lot of trading on Kraken lately. And that's been a lot of fun. Their charts are amazing. I never realized how much of a great trading platform that exchange is. But it's pretty cool. So let's go ahead and look at the coin market cap right now. So right now we're at roughly $324 billion. Right? For the whole coin market, yeah, that's pretty good. We were at 300 in like 7 yesterday, something like that. It was very low. So we got an extra 20 billion insurgents plugged right in. If we look at Bitcoin, we're at $11,317, up 12% on the day. We got Ethereum at 295, up 4%. We got XRP at 40 cents, up 1%. And Litecoin at $122, up 4%. We got Bitcoin Cash at 413, EOS at $5.98. Binance coin on the losing end at $32, and we have Tron at 3 cents. What's interesting is all the alts are look like they're pumping up now. And this is what happens when it consolidates Bitcoin. When what it's kind of been doing is like it's been going up, consolidating for a little bit, maybe 4 or 5 days, going back up, consolidating for maybe 4 or 5 days and going back up. And right now we're in this consolidation from like the 27th of June to right now. So I wouldn't be surprised. Wouldn't be surprised if we see Bitcoin, if as long as it can keep above this, if we can get past this threshold of 11,500, wouldn't be surprised here in the next couple days, few days, if we see it go up again, because that's what it's been doing. It's consolidating, going up, consolidating, going up. Now, if it goes a downtrend, yeah, then at that point, all bets are off and we're probably headed down to retest those levels again. So it's going to be interesting right now. I'm just looking at Bitcoin personally. I've been throwing a lot of it, throwing a lot of money into it. And Dave Ramsey would be proud.
And investing it in Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, there's some alts that I could get in right now. Other than Ethereum, I'm just sticking with Bitcoin at this point. Just because I strongly and firmly believe that if we can get above this 11,500 range, then we're going to go ahead and soar above these next couple of days. July 4th is always a great day for Bitcoin. I will say, in crypto history, it's always been a good day. And usually weekends, we've been pumping these past, like, since this kind of run has started. Weekends have been especially special for Bitcoin. I've been really good. So if you're out there on July 4th and you take a look at your blockfolio, don't be surprised if you see Bitcoin, you know, over that 13, 14K range. And if it's below that, then just know that we're probably headed to 7,500. We drop down. That's another thing. We drop down over 9K. I think we're going to be headed towards 7,500. So we'll see. Either way, it's going to be interesting, and nothing like some good old volatility to scare away some weak hands, right? That's what they say. Okay, with that, we're going to go into our main topic. Today, we're talking, do you want a revolution? That's right. Bitcoin has become more than just currency at this point, hard currency at that. It's become a way of thinking. Seriously, there's some people out there that just consume themselves of Bitcoin and think this is going to change the entire world. Usually their name starts with a C and ends with a R. I'm just kidding. No, seriously, we're talking about the revolution that's happening here. It's getting started. And it's kind of funny that all it took was a couple sticks from Facebook to do it. You're seeing people wake up and pay attention. And the evangelism and the virus is spreading out there. People are waking up and they're smelling it. Okay, so with that, let's jump into the main topic, starting now.
Mm-hmm.
craziest things about Bitcoin as of late has been the amount of overwhelming support from no-coiners, to be quite honest. What you're seeing here is what I like to call the virus spreading. Make no mistake, we started off as a joke. People didn't take us seriously. A lot of us called us scammers or people that are complete nuts. No one thought this was going to become anything. But what happens is money changes the way you think. And when they saw it rise, they got FOMO, they got fear, and they had all sorts of emotions fixated on that currency evaluation for Bitcoin. But to us, this is nothing new. We've seen this before. We've seen the rise, we've seen the fall of Bitcoin. What we're into is seeing it scale in a much further way than anybody could ever think is possible.
No, it's here's the thing. Bitcoin is not just money. Bitcoin is an invention. And what that invention allows people to do is move value across the internet. And that invention means you can do Bitcoin, but it also means you can do a lot of other things. And Bitcoin is an incredible invention because it, for the first time, it completely democratizes money. It separates money from a function of power of the state to an individual exchange between people, like it used to be when it was shells and feathers, right? Or, barter exchange. But the beauty of it is that it can, at the moment, if you think about it, there's, let's say, 1 billion people in the Western world who have not just banking facilities, but like turbocharged power banking. They have international transactions. They can buy stocks on any stock market. They can do wire transfers. Some of them are credited investors, et cetera. The power users of banking. There's another maybe 2 billion people who have a basic bank account. And then there's the rest of them, right? The giant majority of the population on this planet has very limited access to banking, very limited access to international finance, to lending, to capital, to the ability to even change their money to another currency. And so Bitcoin is so much more important for them. I call this the other 6 billion. Just keep the focus on the other 6 billion, because for the billion, it might be a fad. But for the other 6 billion, this is an opportunity to change the way we deal with poverty, and to change the way we unite the economic system of the planet, which is a whole other level of conversation. You know, we look at Bitcoin and we think of it as just money, but it's not just money for the internet. Money for the internet is what it does, and it does it very well. But it's the internet of money, and it allows people at the edge, by downloading just a simple application, to join an economy, and then to hold their own money without any state or corporation being able to steal it from them or inflate it out of value and destroy their children's future. It allows them to hold and control that money and send it to anyone in the world they want to instantly for very little money. I mean, that's never happened before. And the implications it has for poverty, for the developing world, for the way non-governmental organizations work is staggering. Just take one example, international remittances. At the moment, $500 billion sent every year from the first world to countries in the developing world, right? And out of that money, $74 billion gets spent in fees, fees as high as 30 or 40%. In fact, the poorer the country, the higher the percentage of fee you have to pay. So a Somalian migrant in the U.S. who's sending $100 home, only 70 gets to the wife or the brother back home or the husband back home, and the rest gets chewed up by the money transfer companies. Now, we give the developed world 150 or so billion, and then we to the richest and hope it trickles down, and then we take 74 billion from the poorest. What if we could change that? What if we could enable Bitcoin remittances and international payments and redeliver that 74 billion of their money and allow them to send that money directly home without paying that fee? That changes the lives of 1 billion people.
Wow. So you envision Bitcoin as being a universal currency.
Absolutely. And it already is.
Will it absorb the dollar? Will the dollar go away?
No.
Will the dollar coexist along with Bitcoin? Like, what is your hope for this?
Well, I mean, I think that, like many disruptive technologies, it's going to change the power balance. It's not that the dollar goes away or the banking system goes away. It just has less power and less relevance in a new world where people control their own money and can send it to each other.
So ultimately, the grand hope is that the money, the dollar that we see today, becomes, in the future, much like the written letter. You don't fucking need it anymore. You can send emails. You can send someone a text message. You don't have to get on a fucking pony and carry your mail over to another state.
Yes, and the thing is, the dollar, again, is the world reserve currency, and there's only one of it. Now, are there 193 other currencies that some of them may end up getting replaced? Some of them may end up even converting into cryptocurrencies of a nation state, you know, like, I don't know, Thailand coin, why not? Or Fed coin, if we're doing it here. But the point is that we can't judge Bitcoin on the standard of the most comfortable world reserve currency that's the most stable currency. We have to look at the rest of the world and see what their currencies are like. And in many countries, the currency is worth less than goat shit because you can burn goat shit longer than you can burn these bundles of paper money that doesn't burn very well. You know, and in those countries, this is not a matter of shopping. This is a matter of the future of their children, and it's a matter of development.
Wow, that's really fascinating.
The financial services industry is up for a serious disruption or transformation, depending on how it approaches Bitcoin. Now, we went through and identified 8 different things that this industry does. It moves money, it stores money, it lends money, it trades money, it attests to money, it accounts for money, and so on. You see, one of the primary features of Bitcoin is that it doesn't require an intermediary like traditional currency does. Rather than a bank or other central institution validating transactions, all users of the currency verify it in a decentralized fashion. It eliminates the need for middlemen in financial transactions. And it's no wonder why banks are worried, because Bitcoin eliminates the need for their services. We don't have to pass through multiple hands. We don't have to KYC or AML. We can do this much more quickly. We can do this on the blockchain. And it's become far harder to regulate financial activity by doing this, which has especially interesting implications on the international level.
There's no denying that the United States fixed income market is global in nature. I do find it interesting that we still debate whether or not the Fed, in fact, installed a time bomb. You know, for years we've been talking about inflation is going to explode, the dollar is going to plummet. It hasn't happened. And by continuing to extend our time frame waiting for that to happen, instead of inflecting in the other direction, which in fact the Fed has done, the balance sheet is beginning to normalize. Chairman Powell, more likely than not, will be confirmed by the Senate, and he's going to continue on a gradual normalization path. I think in the end, the debate about whether we have a bond bubble, it's certainly linked to central bank policy, but it's also linked to our central banks pursuing monetary policies that are at odds with global growth. If they were, we would have exploding global growth and exploding inflation, and that has not happened. The Bitcoin mania, I think, has a lot to do with the fact that there are skeptics to what I just said. People who are looking for an asset they don't believe is linked to central banks, who I think have been unduly vilified. And so you look for things not controlled or affected by a global central authority.
That's what Chamath
said. These are all
that,
linked.
In a nutshell, yeah. What about Hans? You look smart. Something about that tie.
That's it.
Yeah.
I think bubbles are, if history has shown us anything, bubbles have really formed around an idea and new technology, right? Whether it was railroads, canals, biotechnology, the internet, name it. You won't know until after the fact, but the fact of the matter is that we have, what is different this time? What is unique? We've had a generation in this business, in investing, that has known only one environment, which is a price of money at or near zero, or interest rates falling. So you have people a decade into their careers, right? We're with some responsibility now, that really have no idea of what, when you have a true price of money that is determined by the marketplace, how that cascades through everything else. I mean, the Fed's actions have had consequences, right? I mean, look at coin prices, look at art prices, look at stock prices, bond prices, real estate prices. It's leaked into the system.
Yeah.
And money has been pressurized. Well, when you depressurize money, what's going to happen?
I like the idea of the time bomb, but you don't think there is one, or you think people think there's one, but you don't really think there is one. I hope there isn't, but it makes me nervous when people give the Fed the opportunity to take a victory lap, like, wow, they were great. They really saved us, and everything's just great. And that just makes me think, really? Usually Murphy's Law would take over, and if something can get screwed up, it does get screwed up. So you think the exit's going to be as clean as they've saved everyone? Here we are at 3% growth, and it's clear sailing here and in Europe.
Well, we're optimistic on the economy. Both monetary and fiscal policies seem to be well-calibrated for this point of the cycle, although one could argue maybe a revenue-neutral tax cut at full employment would make more sense as opposed to one that may expand the deficit, and we can get into a whole dynamic scoring argument there. And to your longer-term point, I do think the Fed has helped to build a base for this prolonged economic recovery. Yes, it's been slow, but in fact, so was the last recovery. In an economy where demographics have shifted markedly from the 70s and 80s, the slow recovery, the jobless recovery phrase that we've used over and over each time we're coming out of a recession, there's a reason for that, and it's not just linked to the Fed making some sort of mistake.
The U.S. dollar is the reserve currency of the global economy. Now, the global economy is interconnected in a way that is unprecedented in human history. Just imagine, let's say, the internet, but limited to financial transactions. At the core of this vast financial web is the U.S. dollar. The United States Treasury, essentially a de facto global central bank, a large part of the ability of the United States to maintain its dominance in the world is down to the dollar standard. This is a form of centralization that is being massively disrupted by Bitcoin. With the emergence of Bitcoin, financial transactions are now being decentralized on a massive scale. These decentralized transactions have no recourse whatsoever to the US dollar. This changes the dynamics of international trade, foreign relations, diplomacy, and the impact of economic sanctions. There have always been attempts to de-dollarize the global economy, and Bitcoin seemed to be the means of achieving that goal. Make no mistake, countries like Russia and Venezuela have considered creating their own state-owned cryptocurrencies, but it's Bitcoin that will truly decentralize the globe. Every single mainstream financial actor from all over the globe function in the U.S. market. It is for this reason that any upheavals in the U.S. financial market always sends shockwaves around the world. Case in point, the 2008 global financial crisis, which saw widespread economic hardship in countries as far away from the U.S. to Iceland.
To really understand Bitcoin, you have to understand money from a very fundamental point of view. Unfortunately, most people do not spend enough time pondering the nature of money. And this is strange and somewhat tragic because we spend our lives chasing it. Money is half of every transaction. It is the most important commodity in the world. And yet, for the most part, people have only the most superficial understanding of it. And from an early age, we understand that money is good, right? We want it. We're happy when we have it, and we're sad when we don't. And we learn that to obtain money, we must work hard. And as we leave childhood, we go to school for many years and work very hard so that we may obtain more money. So much of our lives is spent searching and grasping for something that we don't really understand. Now, on the surface, the reason that we seek this money is very simple, right? It lets us buy things. So one can see that Bitcoin is revolutionary in this regard. For the first time ever, a form of money, superior to all others due to its specific attributes, has been successfully decentralized and decoupled from the material world in such a way that nobody can turn the system off. And the world has never seen this before. I think that there is now a certain inevitability that markets around the world will gradually gravitate toward the superior money. After all, money is a good like all others, and it competes for the attention of those using it. So I think it is fair to say that Bitcoin is a monumental invention that has finally been captured by mankind. And if you understand the deep and central role that money plays in every aspect of our lives, then might not Bitcoin be considered as important as things like the printing press, or the automobile, or the internet? And considering these other inventions, not everybody is literate, not everybody has a car, and not everybody's online. But everybody uses money. So all of you who are involved in this right now are making history. And perhaps most exciting about this is that the only thing which can derail this invention is an even better invention. If you play through the various scenarios in your mind, you'll realize that Bitcoin can only fail if a superior currency takes its place, in which case mankind is even better off, and the promise of Bitcoin will carry forward into its successor. So the genie is truly out of the bottle, and we are right now in the middle of a very grand experiment to see what this genie is capable of. The point is this: Bitcoin, like gold, has properties that make it an excellent form of money. However, unlike gold, Bitcoin can actually be used in our modern economy for day-to-day exchange. Unlike gold, Bitcoin, as an asset with no counterparty risk, can be transferred to anyone on the planet in 1 second. It is superhero currency, and nobody's permission is needed. There is no terms of service. Further, Bitcoin's decentralized nature means that it is not in danger of being shut off. The incumbent monetary monopolist cannot stop it. Perhaps you know to whom I'm referring. Thus, Bitcoin can actually achieve critical mass. And nothing has ever been able to claim these attributes before. Bitcoin's attributes enable it to operate freely and grow with an increasingly larger sphere of activity. Inevitably, this means it will start displacing monies with inferior attributes. Bitcoin will grow like a benevolent hydra, with heads sprouting up in every country and every community. It will gobble up commerce that has, until now, been shackled to the economic witchcraft of a decrepit fiat financial system. And it will leave an expansive, frictionless marketplace in its wake. It is up to all of you guys to grow and capture and nurture that new marketplace. Someday in school, I think that the curriculum will be different. The children will be taught the true nature of money. They'll learn the difference between a real asset like Bitcoin, which is based on merit, and a virtual currency like the US dollar, which is based on coercion. They'll learn how powerful a market can be when its medium of exchange is honest. And they'll learn how a small group of idealistic entrepreneurs saved the world from a monetary dark age. I feel very excited for my children to someday grow up in this world, and I can't wait to see what happens.
Bitcoin is open source. Its design is public. Nobody owns or controls Bitcoin. And the greatest feature is that any one of you can take part in it. It's unique. And it's revolutionary. So you have to really ask yourself, do you want a revolution? Do you want Bitcoin revolution? I think you do. Because so do I. All right, I think that's all we got on this first episode of the new season. I hope you guys stick around. It's going to be exciting. With that, let's get on to the end of the show.
Tell me that it's evolution. can count me out. For people with minds that hate, all I can tell you is, brother, you have to wait. With anyone
Ladies and gentlemen, the Thriller Crypto is Dunsies. Thank you so much for listening. Had a fantastic time creating this episode, crafting it. You know, fucking revolutions, man, can lead to extraordinary things, you know. And this Bitcoin revolution that we're going through, that's happening right in front of us. Just every once in a while, step back and take a look and just realize how far we've come. It's a beautiful thing. Buy Bitcoin. Save the world. See you tomorrow.
This is the end of the show. Financial advice. Everything Carr said likely won't come true. It is up to you.